hit it.
This is Hearing Voices, a weekly interview with the voices you hear calling the action of college sports, along with a scouting report on the Tigers' next opponent. Now, here is your host, the voice of your Fighting Tigers, Chris Blair.
Oh, a microphone-y.
And a phony at the mic.
Welcome back, Tiger fans. We are headed towards week two of the LSU football season, and of course, it means week two of Hearing Voices. We're glad you stopped by our little podcast once again. Of course, you can subscribe, of course, Apple Podcasts, and of course, you can always catch the episodes at lsusports.net/podcast. Well, the Tigers are getting ready to go on the road for the first time this year, trying to pounce back, so to speak, from the tough loss at home last Saturday. And for the second straight year, Tigers will head to Music City to take on Vanderbilt. Now, that's odd in itself, but it's also odd that LSU's playing Vanderbilt so often. It had been a while up until last year's meeting once again at Vanderbilt Stadium. So this week, our very special guest joining us, one of my good friends and one of the greatest nice guys you'll ever meet, a fantastic broadcaster who's done so much. And for over two decades, of course, has been the voice of the Vanderbilt Commodores. I'm talking about Joe Fisher. Joe, it's great to talk with you. I can't thank you enough for giving me time, because as I say to all of us, this time of year, during a week, getting ready for a game, whether it's home or on the road, we're all pretty busy.
Well, we're all kind of scrambling right now because everybody's dealing with, you know, different elements with how we are doing things. I know you probably are traveling differently than you normally would to the game. You know, we're going to be handling things differently in the stadium. Certainly not going to be crowd there, so there's a lot of elements that are going to change. But I think for the most part, I'm just glad to still be doing what we're doing and have the opportunity to bring it to everyone. And glad we're fortunate enough to still have great college Southeastern Conference football to talk about.
Yeah, it seems like that's the way we talk these days, Joe. I mean, because if somebody asks us how things are going, then you have to kind of, you know, have a caveat that says, well, I've got to do this differently and this differently. And it sounds like you're complaining when I think you said it best. We're all thankful we're getting to do this at all.
Yeah, last week, as a matter of fact, as you know, Chris, we opened on the road in College Station, Bryan/College Station, against Texas A&M, and our broadcast crew did not travel. You know, we did the game from a remote studio location here in Nashville. And that might be a norm for us as we go forward. We have to wait and see, just because, you know, dealing with travel, dealing with access to the team or lack thereof, you know, dealing with hotel situations, commercial flights, when game times are, when you get in and out, all those things. You just have to kind of look at all the options on the table. But, you know, the business as usual has left the building, that's for sure.
Couple of things before we talk about the matchup this weekend. Again, Joe Fisher, voice of the Commodores, joining us this week on Hearing Voices. You mentioned earlier about an empty stadium. Now, I know in late August, early September, there was some talk that possibly students, Vanderbilt students, would be allowed, a limited number, obviously. As we head into week two, which happens to be, as you pointed out, the first home game of the year, has there been a decision there, or is it literally going to be an empty stadium?
It is my understanding, Chris, that they have opened up starting, and they have not given me the number, but they have opened up usually using basically a seniority basis to undergraduate senior class members the opportunity to be in attendance. Again, I'm sure there's a cap on how many that is, and they didn't say, well, once they open it up to all of those senior class members, if they didn't fill whatever that number was, they would step down to juniors. My guess is that's probably the case. And I know for folks who are familiar with LSU, and you think, my gosh, you know, they turned it loose on the students, they'd have thousands of them in no time. Now, you have to remember, Vanderbilt's only got about 6,000 or 7,000 total undergraduate students. So it's a whole different, you know, pool that you're dealing with. But as far as I know, there will be a limited number, you know, and I would say we're talking lower hundreds here. I don't even know what the exact number would be of students that would be admitted. They would be required to wear masks. They'll be required to social distance in the stands. There'll be no concessions in the stands or anything like that. So there will be at least some live people in the stands, but there won't be very many.
going to be different. Obviously, it all has been different for some time now, Joe. And, you know, last thing on that, we saw Major League Baseball come alive during the summer, which was a great sign. Obviously, the NFL still, you know, having to overcome some hurdles as recently as this week, as I know you well know. But with nobody in the stands, do you know from a game day atmosphere standpoint, are they going to possibly pipe in some type of noise, a crowd swell, anything like that? Have you heard any talk of that? Because we've all kind of become accustomed to that when we watch these contests, certainly in the NFL, with an empty stadium.
Yeah, I think you're probably going to hear, Chris, whether it's a combination of crowd noise and music, that's my guess, that you'll hear some intermittent sound in between plays, obviously silence for when the plays take place. But I think they've done a little bit of thought on this and realized not only have we become accustomed to hearing some kind of noise, the players are kind of accustomed to it too. And so, you know, as you know, practice a lot of times they've got music blaring or, you know, whatever, crowd noise blaring. I think you'll have some of that for the game on Saturday night. But again, I think they pay a lot of attention to, you know, when a certain time comes in between plays, that's when you have to shut all that down so everybody can, you know, be about their plan. But, you know, it is interesting, I know, for teams and for offenses that are making changes at the line of scrimmage. You're not dealing with what you would be dealing with normally in terms of the sheer number and crowd noise that you have to deal with. But, yeah, I think there will be some noise that you'll hear off and on throughout the day.
Joe Fisher, our guest, voice of the Vanderbilt Commodores, LSU traveling to Nashville for a 6:30, probably 6:39 kickoff this coming Saturday night. Joe, before, again, you got me intrigued because you mentioned last week you and your crew called the game remotely from Nashville as Vanderbilt played against Texas A&M. We're going to talk about that matchup in just a moment. But it occurs to me that when I was in college, I guess my real start calling games was at my fraternity house watching buddies of mine play Tecmo Bowl, for those who are old enough to remember that. And I would sit on the couch and call the game, usually trying to be funny but failing miserably. But I've done here recently a couple of games like Madden as well as NBA 2K for the gamers, and you sit in a room. Again, it's different when you're watching a video game, but the atmosphere for the broadcaster themselves sitting in an empty room, trying to convey the emotion, have the intonation you're used to giving when you're in a venue and there is a crowd. What was it like for you and your crew doing that? Because we haven't done that yet, but I have to imagine there's some challenges you have to overcome.
Well, honestly, Chris, I didn't know what to expect, and I thought about all of those things. You have to first clear the hurdle in your mind of what's going to happen if I have technical issues. You know, what happens if I lose the video feed? What happens if these things go wrong? How do we deal with that? You also have to kind of let go and realize that in a lot of ways you are at the mercy of whatever they send you. You know, we are accustomed to being in the stadium and being able not only to see what's happening on the field, but to be able to see what's happening on the sideline, what's happening in the stand, what's happening in the coach's booth when you have the opportunity. On those areas, you're totally at the mercy of whatever the camera feeds allow you to get. And so that was one element that I had to work through. For me, and I don't know, and I have a guess, Chris, you're the same way. I guess I've been lucky. When I put a headset on my head and cover my ears with that headset, I tend to go into a tunnel. And so it really doesn't matter where I am or what's going on around me. I'm able to just kind of be in the moment at that time. You probably don't go as crazy for a touchdown score when you're sitting in a control room as you do for a touchdown score if you're sitting in a stadium of 100,000 people. That's probably human nature as much as anything else. But in terms of being able to follow the game, there were actually, in some ways, some positives to it. I mean, you get close-ups on a lot of people. It's a lot easier to kind of spot, you know, and see who made tackles you know, who was involved in certain situations. You get replays pretty quickly, which is nice. And so it actually, there were some elements to it that were a bit of a positive. It did take some getting used to. You know, it took, you know, I had my color analyst with me sitting next to me, and then my sideline guy also sitting next to me, who was fitted into the conversation. So his role in the broadcast was a bit different because he really couldn't bring us the full element of what the sideline is like. But overall, with great help from the SEC Network, the ESPN folks, even the folks at A&M, who really helped us with an audio feed that gave us live-time audio, live-time referee mic. When you put all that together, it actually worked out to be, I think, a pretty solid technical performance.
All right, Joe. Now, you better keep some of those secrets quiet because people are going to figure out that anybody could do our jobs if we're not careful. All right, let's talk football a little bit because, you know, I know for a fact that Coach Derek Mason is not the type that puts any value into moral victories. But when you go back and look coming into this year, you know, last year was kind of an anomaly when you look at the history of Coach Mason and Vanderbilt football. I mean, he said it many times. They won't have the most talented roster in the SEC. But when you play Vanderbilt, his goal is to make sure you knew you were in a battle, a physical team, make you work for every inch you get. Last year, as I said, kind of an anomaly there. But based on what we all saw on Saturday against Texas A&M, a team that had high hopes going into the year, Kellen Mond supposed to take that giant leap forward, you guys got after him. What was kind of the feeling? Again, not a moral victory, but what was the feeling coming away from a game in which a couple of plays go a different way, you guys pull the upset?
Yeah, I think I'm always curious, Chris, to see the reaction of a team after a game like that because there's two options. One is some bit of elation in the fact that you took a top 10 ranked team to the wire, you know, in their place, and you kind of feel good about yourself because you made a nice showing. The other is true disappointment in that you had a chance to win that game and didn't. And that has been, for my time on the practice field this week, the latter has been more the response I have seen. There were so many unknowns for Vanderbilt rolling into that game, not the least of which was rolling out an absolutely true freshman quarterback who was making his first ever collegiate appearance. I don't think anybody had any great idea what to expect. He was not the only young guy on the field for Vanderbilt. There were a bunch of guys that got their baptism by fire last Saturday night. But I think what I can, I talked to a couple of the veterans on the team about it, and there seemed to be a bit of, I don't want to say confirmation necessarily, but it was for those older guys, you know, we knew we had some youth. We knew we had some things that are going to have, we're going to have to see how that plays out. We were extremely encouraged to see a lot of the things that they saw. One of them is exactly what you talked about, Chris, the physical nature of the way they played that game. Vanderbilt went toe-to-toe with A&M in every aspect of the game. In terms of the physical nature of play, in terms of causing turnovers, in terms of causing penalties. A&M had a lot of penalties that were really costly to them. One cost them a safety, as a matter of fact, on a really poor special teams decision. You know, and if you come out of just that game one, Vanderbilt, though they were the decided underdog, though they were decidedly the more youthful of those two teams, I don't want to say look to be the better prepared team. They were not in awe of the situation they were in. And I think, you know, I think that was a big boost for them, you know, to perform in that atmosphere, carrying on now against, you know, a defending national champion rolling into town.
Absolute grudge match in College Station last week, 17-12, Texas A&M gets by. Todd Fitch, Joe, coming down, joining the staff, very familiar here with his time at Louisiana Tech. You go with Ken Seals, true freshman, which, again, stands out to me because he's just the third true freshman to start an SEC game in an SEC schedule since 1972. Tell us what's different about what Todd Fitch and company want to do. I know looking at some of the film, you don't see double tight ends much more these days in college football. But what's the philosophy, And how did Ken Seals kind of arrive at the guy they felt most confident with putting the football in his hands?
Well, I asked Derek Mason about that because this battle literally was four quarterbacks that came in battling for this spot. Now, Ken is a January enrollee, and that turned out to be a huge benefit because he got the opportunity to be here for the spring, limited as it was. But he was there taking some snaps and then being in those meeting rooms in the spring. And I think that was a huge jump for him to be a part of that. But Derek talked about, you know, being a quarterback at this level is not just about how strong your arm is. It's not just about, you know, the technical aspects of it. It's about leadership. It's about, will your team follow you? It's about, do you make enough right decisions and not make the wrong decision that's really costly, you know, on a consistent basis? So a lot of it to me, Chris, was not just about X's and O's. He certainly has the arm. He's 6'3", about 217. He's got the physical makeup, but he seems to have that other factor where the team rallies around him. They believe he's their guy, and they follow him in the decisions that he will make. I was quite frankly amazed that rolling into a game one with basically a new offensive line, with a freshman, at quarterback, with wide receivers that have had, you know, different levels of expertise, there were very few what you would call miscues. I mean, took a delay of game penalty, but that was on purpose, you know, to back it up to put the ball away. I mean, there were no issues in getting the play in, getting lined up, getting personnel in. They seem to be extremely organized, and I just think they seem to follow this guy. I mean, he threw an interception, which I think, frankly, between us, was a receiver breaking a route off that he shouldn't have. Then you watch to see what the reaction is on the sideline. The reaction was to get together, talk about it, pat him on the back, get a smile, and move on to the next thing. And I think that was very encouraging. It's a guy that seems very comfortable in a leadership role.
No doubt about it. I mean, you put it best. LSU fans certainly can agree there's more to just arm strength when it comes to quarterback. And, again, pretty good showing for a true freshman in a tough go to start the season. Last thing on offense before we move to defense. Favorite target on Saturday, Amir Abdul-Rahman. You know, 5 catches, 72 yards, did have the touchdown. Stands 6'4", 217 pounds. And, you know, when I was preparing the depth chart this week, I had totally forgotten that, you know, last year injured in the opener against Georgia. So, you know, again, coming back into this season, you've covered this league for a long time. You've seen some really good receivers. How high is this young man's ceiling?
Well, it's interesting because Amir is one of those guys, Chris, that a lot of us, even a couple of years ago, said, you know, this is a guy that has a big upside. And you mentioned you started with 6'4". Good speed. He's not I don't think anybody would call him a burner necessarily, although he's got really good solid speed. But he's 6'4". He's got a great wingspan. He's really good at the 50-50 ball. And he's one of, quite frankly, two or three guys in this receiving core that people have said, you have an opportunity to take this to the next level. I mean, there are two or three guys in this receiving core that are in that 6'4 mode. And for some reason, I always wondered, you've been around this a long time, sometimes quarterbacks and receivers just get that connection. They just see, you know, I've been around receivers who say, they will come back to the huddle and tell the quarterback, this guy cannot cover me. You know, call a play, come to me, come to me. I think we saw a little bit of that last week, and we saw a variety. I think one of the real compelling stories and what makes, I think, an opportunity for Amir Abdul-Rahman to maybe go to the next level, the variety of catches he made. He made 5 catches. One of them was a back shoulder throw that was beautiful on the sideline. One of them was a tough catch in traffic that he went up and out-muscled a defensive back for. One of them was a beautiful throw in the back corner of the end zone that only he could catch, and he got the foot down for the touchdown. I mean, it showed the variety, the myriad of the talents that I think he has available. But it all goes back to, again, as you know, Chris, that guy may be the greatest receiver that you have, but if the quarterback doesn't have time to find him, it doesn't matter. And this offensive line that's made up of two starters who were former defensive line starters, actually, I think, might have been one of the stories of last week. You know, if they can continue to play the way they did last week and give Seals time, and the combination of Todd Fitch's offense, which tends to be a snap it in the pistol of the shotgun, take two, three steps, and get that ball out of there. If they can continue to do that, well, we'll see what the growth process for this offense could be.
Joe Fisher, thrilled to have him on this week on Hearing Voices. He's getting ready for the game coming up Saturday night, LSU traveling to Nashville to take on Vanderbilt. Real quickly, I lied, Joe. I got to ask you one more thing about the offense, because very similar to LSU, right now it appears Vanderbilt has three young men in the mix at running back. Last week, Keon Henry-Brooks, sidelined due to illness, did not play, but Clowney and Wakefield, along with quarterback Seals, able to rush for 102 net yards. Is this a combination? Well, question one, do you expect Henry Brooks back this week? And then secondly, much like LSU, at this point of the season, early on, is it going to be kind of running back by committee?
Well, I think two guys really stepped up that had battled their combination of injuries. You know, Jamari Wakefield and Javion Marlowe have both been through their injury situations last year. And in terms of Keon Henry Brooks, I think that's probably going to be a game day decision on whether or not he is available to play. But I think Vanderbilt fans, among the number of things they were excited about, one of them was that category, because they kind of saw, especially with Marlowe. Marlowe came in, you know, and people had highly touted him. Well, here's a guy who runs strong. He's got breakaway speed. He can do a lot of things, but he couldn't stay healthy. Well, he showed a little bit of what we were expecting in that game on Saturday night. Jamari Wakefield has got big body, you know, a strong back that actually has really good speed for his size. And I think those two are actually comfortable in a situation of trading time. And we've been around these things for years, and sometimes you find situations where backs get upset if they don't get 20 carries or if they don't, you know, they're not utilized in certain situations. I don't think that's at all an issue here. The thing that I was focused on as much as anything and can be a real downfall for tailbacks and running backs is pass protection. And I think both these guys showed the ability to pick up a blitzing linebacker to be able to do things to help that play continue. So I think that was a very encouraging thing. In fact, Derek Mason, one of the comments he made to me, Chris, in our post-game interview was, I saw two guys that ran the ball hard tonight. So that was something that obviously jumped out to him as well. So to get to, if Henry Brooks had come back, that would be a true bonus, you know, in the whole thing. But I think for the most part, they feel pretty comfortable with Marlowe and Wakefield back there handling the carries.
All right, let's talk defense real quick in our remaining moments here with Joe Fisher, voice of the Vanderbilt Commodores on Hearing Voices. A new face, new name on the defensive side of the ball, and that's Ted Roof, obviously veteran coach, kind of a journeyman, spent, I think, most of his time in the ACC. Of course, was the head coach of the Duke Blue Devils there for a couple of seasons. Last year was in Boone at Appalachian State, comes in this year. Got some pretty good guys to work with. Obviously, Dio Dangbo up front, the Orgy brothers at linebacker. What's the philosophy defensively? How is it different from, say, a year ago? And what did you see? Obviously, they were able to force a lot of turnovers against an experienced offense and an experienced quarterback in Texas A&M. What are the characteristics of Vandy's defense as opposed to, say, last year?
Well, I think one of the things that stepped up, there were several things that came off the page to me, Chris, watching that game against Texas A&M, because I think a lot of us really didn't quite know what to expect. Vanderbilt was able to get pressure on Kellen Mond without blitzing. They were able to rush three and four at a time and create problems. I don't think anybody saw that coming. That was a big plus. You mentioned the physical nature of the game, and I would think if you watch 60 minutes of football, I think the Vanderbilt defense was more physical than the Texas A&M offense. It's a defense that swarms to the football. It's a defense that looks for the strip, for the fumble. They had success a couple of times punching the ball out, in one particular instance, just literally taking it out of the hands of a running back, just stripping the ball away. They are always looking for that extra that extra edge. So I think that was fun. The other thing that was maybe most telling, and Ted Ruth told us before the game, and we kind of took it with a grain of salt, he said, we're going to play a lot of guys. We're going to play a lot of younger guys. We're going to play some freshmen. And so that's the way this is going to go. We're not just going to rely on, 16 guys for the course of a game. And that turned out to be the case. And we saw true freshmen like Donovan Kaufman, who had a big first game in the defensive backfield. A number of guys who kind of got a lot of early reps. And so it was a defense, I think, that maybe made more of an impact than a lot of folks thought, but a very aggressive one, one that played without the leading tackler, from last year, Demetri Moore, who had 99, tackles on the season. He did not play last week, hoping he will this week. That would be another factor that would fix in to help this defense. But I think some excitement there. A ball-hawking group. They had some poor tackling early. I don't know how much of that is just a product of them not having full-speed practice on a lot of cases, but it got better as the game went on. I think that'll be a real focus to see how that goes early on in this game.
Well, Joe, I can tell you this. For Tiger fans listening, they certainly took note of the fact that Vandy had success rushing 3 and 4 and still getting pressure, because unfortunately for LSU this past Saturday, that was the case for Mississippi State. And obviously some offensive line woes being worked on for Coach Ed Ogeron and company this week. And by the same token, I imagine Vanderbilt probably happy to see they may be able to attempt to get pressure without having to go full house blitz most of the game. Joe Fisher, nice enough to join us once again this season for Hearing Voices. Looking forward to the game, Joe. And real quick, away from football a little bit, I've talked to Neil Price from Mississippi State last week, and we all had a chance to get on a call back in May, all of us broadcasters in the SEC, and I know you feel the same way. It was a great conversation because there was so much unknown. Our worlds had completely changed. But for you, you're one of the few lucky ones that actually got to sit courtside and call a basketball game in Nashville for the SEC tournament in that opening day. And then that went on Wednesday, then Thursday. We're told no crowds early, and then before lunchtime, it's absolutely scrapped. When that happened, obviously Vandy baseball shut down that weekend as well. For you, what did you do? What did you make the most of your time with, again, when we were all kind of either quarantined to our house or certainly limited to where we would go? Is there something you found you were able to take more advantage of, maybe pick up a hobby or work on a hobby? Or what was it you did with your time?
Well, I would like to say that I got stronger, and built up a lot. That didn't happen.
Me neither.
I feel sorry about that. It's funny. I flash back to that. It's kind of funny you say that, because I was, yes, lucky enough to do that late game on the opening day of the SEC tournament. I was not lucky in the fact that we lost, but I remember that night where we all had to store our equipment, cases, was in an office in the Bridgestone Arena that the SEC had. That was their, where their people went as well. And so we finished our broadcast. Now, we've already been told during the broadcast that the fans will not be allowed to come the next day. And so we've already announced that, for everybody who's paying attention, for all of the others that are coming. And we began to speculate and say, I'm just hoping they get to play these, but we don't know yet. Well, I had to wait about 45 minutes after our broadcast concluded because the SEC folks were having a closed-door meeting. And I think everybody in the building and all of us knew what that was all about. So we waited, and I finally had the door open, and I was able to go in and get my case. And Commissioner Sankey, who you know, Chris, as well, is just a great guy and a really, really, I think, impressive leader for the Southeastern Conference. He apologized, and I said, don't worry about it, I got it. And so I went and got my case, went and unloaded my stuff, went back and was leaving the arena, and it's dark and, you know, walking out, and I'm going through one of the entry corridors that comes to the floor, and here comes Commissioner Sankey. And he nodded his head at me, and he said, so you headed to baseball? And I said, yeah, we got Kentucky this weekend here for the, you know, conference opener. He said, I hope we can keep you busy. And when he said that, I said, oh, they know more than they've let on. And, of course, shortly after that, everything was canceled. So, you know, the grand scheme for me after that was, you know, we did a lot of Zoom things. We did all of our alumni things around the country. Of course, Vanderbilt is a, you know, national alumni base. And so we did a lot of alumni gatherings with coaches and things together, and those went really well. And I'll be honest, during the time when so many things were shut down and, you know, people were saying you had to social distance, I would run to the golf course and, practice, you know, on the range, or if I could sneak out and get 9 in by myself. You know, it's pretty easy to social distance at the golf course. And so I would dare say I probably hit as many golf balls during this past summer as I have in a long, long time. I don't think it made me any better, but it was at least an opportunity to get out there. And I remember my wife telling me one time, boy, I wish I had some kind of hobby like that I could go to. But if there was, I don't want to say a positive necessarily, but it was sure nice to be able to, on a somewhat regular basis, just get out and spend an hour or two outside, you know, doing those kind of things, even being by yourself. That proved to be a real positive for me.
All right. Well, I was going to ask you if you improved your handicap, but I won't ask.
Not at all. Not at all. You don't want to go there.
All right. Last thing I got for you, and I meant to ask you this last year when we got together. So I've always been told that Nashville, one of the grand cities in the country, certainly grand city of the South, is a giant small town. I've heard it described that way many times. Obviously, a lot of that due to the industry of country music. For you, having been in Nashville so many years, give us one really good, like, rubbing shoulders with a superstar. Do you have a story where you run into somebody and nobody would believe you unless we knew you lived in Nashville?
Well, let me qualify this, Chris, by saying, because I could probably throw a bunch of these at you, and I don't want to sound like it's bragging, but it's the nature of the city that we're in and the things that we do. It goes back to when I was working in television. I was in college. This is the late 1970s, and I was fortunate enough to be working as a, you know, schlub, just doing whatever I could to help in the sports department for WSM-TV here, which is the NBC affiliate. And at that time, WSM Radio, the Air Castle in the South, that carries the Grand Ole Opry, was in the same building. And so it was Ralph Emery was doing the overnight shows. And so it was not uncommon for country stars to show up. And so I walked downstairs one night. We're getting ready for the 10 o'clock newscast. You walk downstairs, and I go into the break room. There's Dolly Parton. And it's like, hello. And she's like, hi. And I said, I just came to get a candy bar. Hey, good to see you. I mean, that happens all the time. And then, my son went to a school here in Nashville, and one of his classmates was the daughter of Alan Jackson. Well, Alan is a guy that he would come to the games and we would sit at the games, and Alan is the nicest guy, calmest, quiet guy, just wants to go and watch his daughter play. The blessing to this city is, for the most part, people will just let those superstars do that. They don't, you know, accost them at dinner. It's just understood that that's the way it is here. And it's funny, one of my greats with Alan, I don't think he'll mind me telling this. There was a situation where they invited my son over to go play at their place. And so they went over, and of course now Alan has a spread that's probably not similar to mine. I think that's pretty easy to say. So it came time to go pick him up, and I got this is grade school, okay? We're talking, not 10 years old yet. And so I go over to pick him up, and I pull up to the gate. There's, of course, a gate you got to go in. And so I get there, and I get to the gate, and I look out in this massive, you know, expanse of front yard that they have in front of their place. And there's two or three, there's a couple of these, auto, you know, cars, little automated cars that, the youngsters can drive. And basically what it is Alan has several of these cars, and they're like stick shifts. I mean, you have to, like, work them. And basically, Alan Jackson taught my son how to drive a stick shift. So it was. But that was just that's just the way it was, and that's the way it is. And so it's. I've lived in Nashville my entire life. I have been blessed to spend time at the Grand Ole Opry. One of the great memories in my life, Chris, is to be able to be a guest announcer on the Grand Ole Opry.
Wow.
And so to have Bill Anderson introduce me wearing a black and gold jacket and be able to do a commercial and all those things. And so this is I've been all over this country, and there are a lot of great places in this country, but I've never been any place I'd rather live than Nashville.
Well said. And you know, I can't wait till I get Dolly Parton on the show, because I'm going to ask her the same question, and I guarantee you she says, one night I came in and suddenly Joe Fisher arrived in the break room. So
yeah, I'm pretty confident that would not happen, but that's okay. I mean, it's nice to think that anyway.
Joe, it's always a pleasure, man. You're one of my favorites without question. You're always gracious, and I look forward to seeing you on Saturday. Looking forward to a great game, and you guys have a great 2020 Vanderbilt football season. We'll catch up later.
Well, safe travels to you and all of your folks and your team. Let's hope everybody gets through this unscathed.
Sounds good. Joe Fisher, voice of the Vanderbilt Commodores, our guest this week on Hearing Voices. Make sure you don't miss a single episode. Just simply subscribe at Apple Podcasts, or always keep a bookmark at lsusports.net/podcast, where you can catch the latest and also go back and hear some of the older episodes. Next week, we hope you'll join us once again. Mike Kelly, voice of the Missouri Tigers, will be our guest. LSU headed to Nashville this weekend. Again, kickoff at 6:39 Central Time. We'll have the coverage right here on the LSU Sports Radio Network, starting with LSU game day at 4:30 with Hunt Palmer, Marlon Favorite, and Brandon Taylor, and then Gordy Rush and Greg Bowser filling in for Doug Morrow. Join me for the call of the action at Vanderbilt Stadium. Until next week, have a great weekend. Go Tigers. This is Chris Blair, still Hearing Voices.
She's gone country. Look at them boots. She's gone country. Back to her roots.
Don't miss Hearing Voices. Subscribe now and get the latest episode as soon as it is available. Follow Chris on Twitter and Instagram at LSU Tigers Voice. Hearing Voices, with the voice of your Fighting Tigers, Chris Blair, is an exclusive presentation of the LSU Sports Radio Network, a division of LSU SP and Outfront Sports.